Hello, everyone. Summertime is here. We are going to run a rewind episode today. We are going way, way back into our vault. You will definitely enjoy this one, Louise, so we need some time to catch up. Remember, I didn't let Paula retire like she wanted to. I can say that she is probably more busy now than when she was working full-time. She still produces content for the Beacon Journal and this podcast. During the summer, we may have to plug in some of these, but I promise I will bring you the best of the best. Now, with this one, I remember how much fun this was to record. Paula and I went all the way out to Minerva to interview our guest. It was really cool as we spent the whole evening talking about this creature, and the drive home among the dark wooded areas was pretty creepy. Enjoy.
You just heard a clip from the song Right Now by Daniel Rylander, a musical artist from Northeast Ohio. Daniel is our featured artist tonight, so at the end of the podcast, we'll play the whole song for you, and we'll tell you how you can learn more about his music and upcoming performances. And if you're making original music in Ohio, we'd love to feature you right here on Ohio Mysteries. Just shoot us an email on over to feedback@ohiomysteries.com and tell us a little bit about yourself. What if you heard someone pelting your house with rocks, then investigated to find yourself face to face with a large hairy beast on two legs? It was only a matter of time before we got to this topic. You know what we're talking about, especially if you're a BFF, Bigfoot fan. So throw another log on the fire and settle in, campers. I'm your co-host, Steve Yoder. And with me is our storyteller, award-winning journalist, Paula Schleiss, who spent 30 years researching these kinds of stories with the Akron Beacon Journal.
Hi, everyone. But Steve, I'm not going to be your main storyteller tonight. With us is another award-winning journalist, Barbara Galloway, a former reporter with the Akron Beacon Journal and a retired teacher with the Alliance School District. Thanks for being with us, Barb.
You're very welcome. Glad to be here.
In 1978, Steve, Barb was the first journalist to bring to light police reports that were being filed over sightings of a creature of unknown origin that has come to be called the Minerva Monster. She also served as a consultant for a 2015 documentary of the same name. So, Barb, Steve mentioned Bigfoot, but the people who witnessed this thing over a number of years always seemed careful not to use that term, and that always impressed me. They need to be accurate and not hyperbolic. So we're going to put aside the word Bigfoot for now. So Barb, set the stage for us, the geographic location, Minerva. What is this community, this area like?
It's kind of the epitome of a rural community, and in all the best ways, too. We've been here 42 years, but we're newbies. The folks who settled this area, my younger son was a history major and he researched this. The folks in here were mostly German immigrants. And so, for instance, our neighbors and friends, the Hans, their families were deeded their farm by Jefferson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And, wow, real historical connection.
So it was
there.
Settled by mostly Germans, and it became a farm area right off the bat. Down here by the railroad tracks, there was a place called Moultrie, and you look in plat maps in the 1800s, and there was an entire village there with houses right next to each other, a sawmill, a feed mill, a grist mill. It was a booming little community there. What I like about it is I go down to Minerva to shop and people know you, and suddenly you've got five folks in the butcher department of Kishman's, you know, helping you find this and that and helping you cut up your meat in just the right size, and they carry your groceries out. And
that small town charm.
Yeah, and then you go to the Yoder store and they know you too, and they will help you, you know, find the latest things. And they've got lots of local things like local honey, living lettuce that is grown on a horticulture farm not too far from here in a greenhouse. Yeah,
is there any other industry around here other than agricultural? Is everybody related agriculture in some way, or is there like a big enterprise that's doing something
really
else?
There's really no more commercial enterprise anymore. There's a coal for, there's a couple of shops, a couple of factories, but they're kind of downsizing nowadays. So there was industry, there was the creek, there, you know, in the canal days, and then there was the railroad, and so all of those things have gone that made it a booming community in the first place, and so the agriculture and the farming community is kind of what's left after everything else has disappeared, I guess.
That's interesting that, you know, like she's describing, she's going into a store and they're helping her carry her groceries, and I've never seen that. I've grown up in Akron, so that's
yeah, that doesn't
pretty
happen
wild. It's still there, you know, it's still going on.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, being an agricultural community, this is a community that spends a lot of time outdoors. They know they're outdoors, and they know what's supposed to be going on out there,
right?
Which is why it might be a little bit more believable when somebody stands up and says, I saw something I've never seen before outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to know you. We are podcasting from your home in Minerva. Is this Minerva or Paris Township?
Technically, Minerva address is West Township in Columbiana County.
All right. And were you living here in 1978?
Yes, I was. And I had just started at the Beacon Journal in that January.
Oh, so you were a cub reporter.
I was a cub reporter.
And still living on a farm.
And living on a farm.
Now, clearly we can see this as a farm, and so you must be pretty familiar with all manner of animals, domestic and wild.
That was the reason that I was assigned the story. Because I lived on a farm, I got every animal story that came along.
So this one came to an editor's attention. Tell us about the day you were assigned to this. What did the Beacon know at that point? What did they say to you when they wanted you to cover this?
A correspondent had gone to the Starr County Sheriff's Department and found this report where the family had reported that their German Shepherd dog had been found pulled out of its collar and a few feet away lying dead, and they didn't know how that could have possibly happened. And Steve mentioned there's incidents of somebody pelting their house. And then this unusual ammonia-like smell that they kept smelling, they thought there was vandals possibly in the area. And that's kind of the reason that they had gotten this German Shepherd dog in the first place from a neighbor. There had been some vandalism. The family was next to a trailer park. So when they called the sheriff's department after seeing this big hairy thing, they did not know if it was somebody dressed up in a gorilla suit, harassing them, attacking them, you know, planning to vandalize the house, steal something, break in, or whatever. But they were very frightened. So that's why they ended up reporting
it. Let's go back to some of the specifics there. Now, you said they got the dog for some protection because they had already been experiencing this. Do you know how long that had been going on before they called the police?
This was in August of 78, and I guess that summer there had been some vandalism among the neighbors and the folks in the trailer park next door.
And what did the vandalism amount to?
Breaking in, stealing this and that, or, you know, just vandalizing them. Houses, things like that.
So this ultimately was not something that they were going to credit with the hairy beast. That they actually had human vandals in the area that they got the dog for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But when they saw this thing, they didn't know if it was somebody, a vandal dressed up in a monkey suit or something.
Right.
Or whatever. But this, and it scared them enough that they all ran into the house and called the sheriff's department. So that is how the report started.
So this comes to you, basically, it's a police report at this time, and your editor says, go down to Minerva and check this out.
Mm-hmm.
And was the family willing to talk to you? Were they?
Yes, they were. They were very good. A deputy at the time, now captain, retired, James Shannon, was the one from the sheriff's department assigned to it, and he was down there also. And the late Ted Walls, our photographer, was down there with me taking pictures many times, and we went back and interviewed the family as these stories developed. Other neighbors in the area started seeing it too. It came across the road and was in somebody's headlights, and they reported it also.
Now, the original family, they were the Catons, right? Yes. And there were several of them, right?
Yes.
So they had many eyewitnesses to that original report that was called into the police.
Yes, they came on a weekend, or they reported it on a weekend when their adult children always came for the weekend to visit, and there were some neighbors there and some other relatives, so there was a fairly large group.
So let's get into the details of that very night. Did it start with the pelting of the rocks?
Yeah, it kind of started with the pelting of the rocks, and they had been experiencing that, hearing rocks hitting their homes for a couple of weeks.
So they're sitting in the house, and it sounds like someone's tossing rocks at them. What do they do?
And then it happened that the kids were outside. Howie Caton, who's in the documentary, was a teenager at the time, and some of his friends and the neighbor kids were outside playing, and then they saw this huge thing on the bank. It was a strip mine in back of their house, and so it was all grown over with multiflora rose and weeds and everything, and there was this huge being. They always called it the creature.
Was it daylight? Could they see it?
It was becoming dusk.
Okay.
So they could see it clearly. Yeah.
How did they describe it?
And they always described it in exactly the same way. And Denny Haas, one of our Beacon Journal artists, actually came down and interviewed all these folks who had seen it, including some of the neighbors, did a drawing, sort of like a police drawing, a police sketch. They all described it exactly the same way. They could not see facial features. They described it as over 6 feet, maybe approaching 7 feet, covered with hair, but yet they could tell that it was very muscular. They always described it as having a big upper torso and kind of short bowed legs. And they always described it with its hands with palms out. And so when Denny came down to talk to these folks, he got the same description from every single one of them.
I want to be clear. Mm-hmm. I was 3 years old at this time. I understand that I am 6'7". 300 pounds, but I was 3 years old at the time. I was not around.
Well, listeners, you can't see Steve, but we do have our own Bigfoot
right
here.
I wear size 18 shoes.
And so. he does have some scruff.
See, yeah. You could have been a suspect at that point.
You would have been a suspect. Well, let me ask you, you said they couldn't see facial features. Mm-hmm. That's not because it was dark. That's because there was
hair
in front of its face? Okay.
And another reason that they called the sheriff's department was that after they had seen this thing initially up on the bank, they all ran inside. Mrs. Caton, and I think her husband had gotten a shotgun, and I think it was a nephew who got a handgun, because they were really frightened. And they were all sitting around the kitchen table. And the next thing you know, this thing appears at the window, at the kitchen window. It seems to be looking in at them. And there's a floodlight right above the window, so they can see it very clearly. And they can see that, no, we can't see eyes, just the hairy features of the face.
Were they clear on how close it was to their window?
Within a few feet.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Window.
That's scary.
Yes, and it seemed to be looking, again, they couldn't see its eyes, but it seemed to be looking in at them. And
a couple of nights ago, I heard noises in the middle of the night, and I opened my curtain, and there were two skunks mating about 5 feet.
That's scary too.
And that terrified me. I can't even imagine what I probably would have ran screaming from the house if I pulled that curtain back and saw some 6-7 foot beast with hair on its face staring back at me.
And there was no curtain. They could see it very clearly. And one of them, perhaps the nephew, pointed a gun at it, and it didn't move. And it didn't move for quite some time, and then it sort of wandered away on its own. And that told them at the time, okay, it's not somebody dressed up in a gorilla suit trying to scare us. It's not a person, because the person would have run.
Yeah. My dad would do that. My dad would, you know, put on a gorilla mask and scare his kids. You know?
Would he?
Yeah.
Did he ever pull a shotgun on you?
No, unfortunately. No, yeah, no. He didn't.
If he did, you would have flinched,
right? That's
right.
I would have flinched.
Mm-hmm. I mean, are you kind of impressed that, I mean, this thing did not flinch and did not run away. Does that tell you something?
Yeah, it tells me it was obviously something that wasn't human. I mean, obviously humans have a reaction to when you're pointing a gun at them or with somebody who's really, really drunk.
Mm-hmm. I don't think how, yeah, even if you're drunk, I don't know how you stop from having some reaction to somebody lifting a shotgun at you. Mm-hmm. And this thing, they say, had no reaction.
Had no reaction and just wandered off when it felt like it.
Wow.
So at that point, they called the sheriff's department and Captain Shannon and his partner showed up. And when he got out of the car, he remembers the intense ammonia sulfur type smell.
Let's get into that. Why is that important?
Because later on, at this time, Bigfoot was kind of an unknown. They had just invented the term Bigfoot, and it was, you know, somebody out in Washington State who had seen it, and it was not widely known, or, you know, people didn't really know about Bigfoot in those days. Later on, there was quite a few reports that this was one of the things associated with
the ammonia
Bigfoot
smell.
Sightings was the ammonia type sulfur smell.
When I heard that, I thought maybe it's urine. I mean, maybe it's something that
smelled like
big enough
swamp.
The
swamp in the strip mine that was overgrown and just, you know, left after they stripped it for coal kind of smelled like that.
So it might have been an indication that this thing was living there bringing the smell with it.
And the thing that I found odd, being on a farm and being familiar with animals and woods and things like that, is in back of their house, as you walked up the bank of the strip mine pit, and Captain Shannon was the one who found this because he and his partner came with jeeps and everything and explored the whole area in the next days. But he found this one peculiar area right at the edge of the strip mine pit where it was completely overgrown with multiflora rose. And on the farm, we're very familiar with that. It was
multiflora rose.
And I think it was, you know, planted as a way to get rid of other weeds at some point, but then it became a noxious weed of itself. It's thorny and it just is thick and you can't even get through it. If you come out the other side of a multiflora rose bush that you walk through, you were going to look like you've been a victim of the slasher or something. So I thought it was very odd that we found a hollowed out, it almost looked like somebody had cut all the multiflora rose in about a 6 foot around area. It was at least as tall as me. I was 5'4".
Sort of like a tunnel?
Sort of like a tunnel leading to the bottom of this strip mine pit, and at the bottom of it there was all these crushed leaves and branches and things like that, as though something had been sleeping there. And we thought, what in the world would have tunneled out of the multiflora rose and be, you know, camping out at the bottom? It went down about 8 feet.
So it kind of looked like bedding.
Kind of looked like an animal had been sleeping there.
All right. Did it look like a big animal?
Like a big animal.
Did you see it yourself?
Yes.
Okay.
And so Captain Shannon and I had looked at it quite frequently and were trying to figure it out.
Do you remember his reaction to those scenes, the tunnel through the multiflora rose, the bedding that smashed down? What was Captain Shannon's, you know, what was he expressing at that time?
He kept saying, even 40 years later, that he was so impressed with these folks because they were genuinely frightened and they all told the same story. And there was no sign that they were making this up or that they had, you know, schemed to make some sort of hoax or anything like that. They were genuinely afraid. They were genuinely disturbed. And he didn't know what he was looking for or how to explain it, but he was investigating in a very serious manner. Like I said, him and his partner brought jeeps in and looked all over the area in the next several days. We spent, Ted Walls and I and Deputy Shannon spent I don't know how many nights on the Caton's front porch waiting to see if this thing would possibly show up. Unfortunately, it didn't.
You wanted it to throw rocks at you?
We were waiting. We were targets. We were out there. But he he took some hair samples.
Now, where did he find the hair?
On a nail that was sticking out of an old chicken coop.
Was this in the vicinity of where they saw the creature?
Right next to the house.
Okay.
Right next to the garden. There were often big footprints in the garden. And I don't know if it was him or some Bigfoot study person who came in and tried to make a plaster cast of the footprints and failed. So we never
did
got
you
that.
Or he see the footprint?
No, but
the Caton saw it.
The Caton saw it, and somebody else did come in and try to make a plaster cast of it.
Now, would they have recognized? I mean, are they hunters? Would they have recognized?
No.
Like, oh, that's a bear footprint. If it
no.
was,
the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Division of Wildlife. I talked to them quite a bit, and they said, no, it cannot possibly be a bear. There's no bears in this vicinity or things like that. No bobcats, no mountain lions, things like that. So no,
wow,
this can't
so they
be a
were
bear.
Ruling out
they
a
were,
lot
they
of the things you would immediately go to.
But Deputy Shannon at the time had the hair sample and some other things. He found a jawbone, which turned out to be a cow's. But he sent them to Malone College. To a biology professor there to be analyzed, and the biology professor could not identify what the hair samples came from.
Is there a reason there would be a cow jawbone in that area? Would that be normal?
Because, yeah, there was cows in that area, and it was sort of a pasture for a while, I guess. So, yeah, that would
be. So the monster wanted some steak.
Or.
did you find a bottle of A1 sauce back there?
As far as we know, he was a vegetarian.
Okay.
After all
that's
this,
interesting.
After all this settled down, and the Catons, unfortunately, were just harassed mercilessly after these reports came out. And after
harassed by other people?
Other people.
Media?
Media. Not so much media, but other people came. The Bigfoot hunters and the crazies came. After my stories went out on the wire, suddenly they were getting reporters calling from Japan, France, everywhere in the United States. And the Bigfoot hunters, and Ted Walls has a picture with one of the stories of one of these yahoos with their rifle and their beer and their Dobermans who are going to show up and kill Bigfoot. And
these aren't necessarily people from this area. They're coming in from around the country.
They're coming in from all over the place.
You need beer. You need beer to hunt
mm-hmm.
Bigfoot. Yes.
Yes. So eventually, Deputy Shannon and his partner were kind of forced to keep people out rather than just being down there investigating. They had to keep people out. But yeah, after I did the stories and they went out on the wire, everybody descended and they were really harassed.
So the first thought of these guys is let's go find it and shoot it?
Yes, that was their first thought.
Oh, that's
yes.
horrifying.
So,
yeah. I mean, if we were fortunate enough to
mm-hmm.
find another species,
they were going to shoot it.
They want to kill it.
Your first thought, we got to kill it. Drink beer. Well, you know what? If you're gonna kill
yeah.
the only example of a new
mm-hmm.
species, you better be drunk when you do it.
Yeah,
right.
There's no other
right.
excuse
right.
for that.
So yes, there was quite a bit of that. So after that, they did not want to be interviewed anymore. They sort of dropped out of public eye. They did let me interview them, I think, 1 or 2 years later for sort of an anniversary story because they trusted me. But after that, they didn't want to. But I remember talking to Mrs. Caton, and she said she would often put out vegetables and then see these big footprints in the morning in her garden, and the vegetables would be gone. So
that's awesome.
Why we,
vegetarian,
don't think he's
I feel a lot better, actually. I won't be afraid now.
Yeah.
If I see Bigfoot, I'm not going to be afraid. If
what
it's
about
a vegetarian,
on a ride home? What if you see him on a ride home?
I don't have any vegetables to give him, but
okay.
I'm not going to feel like he wants to eat me.
I'm going
to
bet you're
going to
be scared.
I'm not going to be scared. I'm going to pull out my cell phone. You didn't have cell phones back then.
We do not have bear or a gun in the vehicle, so.
That's okay. We have you.
All right.
And you are his match.
That's true. That's
you
true.
Are about the same height, and you got the facial hair.
Yes.
I got you. That's all mm-hmm. I need. You know, I should mention the movie that you were a consultant on was a documentary by filmmaker Seth Breedlove,
mm-hmm.
who has a filming company called Small Town Monsters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I watched it. If you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, you can watch it for free on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Just search for Minerva Monsters and you can see the film. And one thing that impressed me with the story was Deputy Shannon saying that these people were so terrified that he ended up hanging out with them for a couple of hours just to keep reassuring them. And I'm thinking, if you're in his position, you're probably really good at reading people. And if he is seeing genuine, I think he would be able to see fake fear.
Yes.
You know, if they were trying to pull something over. Yes. And if he was that convinced that they were fearful of this thing, that he had to hang around and just put them at ease, that says a lot to me.
Yes, and every time he came back, it was the same. They always had the same story. They always were appreciative of his coming to
help them. And I can say the same thing of you as a reporter. I mean, you're trained to be an observer, to read personalities and characters, and did you feel the same way?
Absolutely.
That there's no way these guys are exaggerating.
Were salt of the earth people, just really down to earth, really good people, and they were not making this up. They were genuinely terrified. They were genuinely concerned about this, and never changed their story, and that's what impressed us.
Now, in Seth Breedlove's documentary, he interviewed at least three other people who had seen this thing as kids.
Yes, and some of them were in the 50s.
Okay, so even 20 years before this sighting.
Yes, 20 years before that.
Did you interview any of them?
No, I was not aware of them at the time.
Okay.
We
had a John Hawkins. He said he was 10. I think he was maybe one in the 50s. He talks about claw marks in the house.
Yes, and talking about his dad going out to the outhouse, which is all they had around here then, and seeing this thing in the little window of the outhouse and being terrified and running back in the house and getting a shotgun. And
yeah, he said his dad stayed up all night with that shotgun.
With the shotgun waiting.
Yeah.
So, yes.
And then there was a Scott Finnegan. He said he was 8 at the time. And his dad had reported seeing this thing. And then he himself, when he was 15, he was out fishing on a boat. Do you remember his story?
Yes, I remember his story. And he said he and his friend saw it and went running screaming to his house or something. And his mom said, yeah, I don't believe you. You know, go back outside. And they were just terrified. And they said the thing kind of chased them.
So they went back.
They went back
to
out.
Sacrifice themselves to the Kraken, and then it
because
chased
that's
them.
That's what it was like in those days. You were just, you know, your mom locked the door. No, go out and play.
Get back out there.
Get back out there. Don't be a wuss.
Go play catch with it.
He said that there was a reputation for that area where they had been calling it the Hairy Witch.
Yes, the Hairy Witch, I guess. And again, that was the name for it back in the 50s and 60s, apparently. And then in the 70s, it was the creature, the hairy creature, but they never called it Bigfoot. They just called it the hairy thing or the hairy creature.
I really want to know what this thing is. There's something there. I want to know what it is.
Obviously something there.
Can't explain what it is, but
That is wild. So the story kind of died down, but the creature did not actually disappear, right? You ended up doing an anniversary story, and they were reporting. What did they report? Were they still physically seeing it?
Sometimes they were still getting rocks on their house, and sometimes, as I said, the mom would put vegetables out on purpose, and they would be gone the next morning. And there's some.
What's the rock thing?
Don't know, but
is there a theory? Did it want the attention?
It's another thing that is associated sometimes with Bigfoot sightings, along with the smell.
Does anybody have a theory on what it is? Are they
trying to
get attention? Like, look over here.
Maybe they're trying to, you know, make some connection.
I don't know, Steve.
When you were over there, you know, waiting on the porch, seeing if did you experience anything that was kind of awkward?
No, it just seemed
Did
very,
the crickets fall silent?
The crickets always fell silent. Whatever night noises, in August, it's pretty loud around here with all the crickets and the cicadas and everything else. And whenever they would see this thing, the crickets would be quiet and there would be silence.
Did that ever happen
along
when
with
you
the
were
smell.
On the porch?
No, unfortunately.
So you never got the smell?
Never got the smell.
You've got to be supremely disappointed.
Yes, I was kind of disappointed. And yeah.
Wow.
But not because we didn't try. We were there for
how many nights?
I mean, I don't even know. We were for weeks, I would say, we were down there on a regular basis. After work, we would just go down and
I mean, they must not live all that far from you, right?
No, they're probably not even 15 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So it's just sort of like I finish my shift, mm-hmm. let me go sit on the porch and see if Ted would sometimes come down
and Deputy Shannon would sometimes go down and we would just sit on the porch and see what we could see and talk to the Catons and yeah, so we kind of became friends.
Wow.
It's kind of neat.
In 2009, in Cleveland, Ohio, Don Pasella was hired by federal and state prosecutors to serve as office manager for a multi-jurisdictional mortgage fraud task force.
This was Don's dream job. As a fierce advocate for justice, she wanted to be a part of something bigger and make a difference in the world.
We are working together to aggressively investigate and prosecute mortgage fraud throughout Northeast Ohio.
Dawn's dream job quickly turned into a nightmare.
She realized that things weren't as they seemed. Evidence was missing, the chain of custody was broken, and her signature was falsified.
Ultimately, Dawn was forced to wear a wire to spy on defendant Tony Viola. When she refused, she was threatened by her bosses.
After Dawn did not appear in court to testify to the misconduct, she was found dead in her apartment under suspicious circumstances. But her death was never properly investigated.
The Parma Police Department closed the case after ruling her death a simple alcohol overdose.
We think there's more to this story.
It's never too late to uncover the truth.
I'm Lexi Kakis.
I'm Andrea Cipriano.
I'm Dana Pohl.
And this is Seeking Justice.
So give me your feelings. What do you think? I mean, I know you're a journalist. What do you believe that there's something out there, or do you really believe that these people just seen something
and that there's a more practical explanation?
I cannot find the practical explanation. I have no doubt that these people saw it, and there have been recent sightings, I think, in the documentary. There's a fellow who was out hunting, and even somebody I know who lives in a wooded area around that place thinks he saw it too in recent years. I cannot explain what it is or why there is no body ever found or no evidence.
That's
ever
what
found.
I was going to bring up is that, you know, people who are in the Bigfoot, you think we would see some
you
bodies.
Think we would see
you know,
a body, someplace. And every body that they've found so far has proven
forever.
To be a hoax.
But you know, somebody else told me once, how many times you're walking through the woods and you find skeletons of animals?
Mm-hmm.
You don't.
That's
mm-hmm.
true.
You know.
So if it dies in the woods, you know, unless it's on a path that somebody's coming across, it may have the time to decompose, be ferreted away by other animals. You know,
most likely ferreted
we find
away by
skeletons
other
in the woods. You know, we have woods back here, and we find deer sheds and skeletons occasionally, and things like that. So you know, the hunters are around here, and as well as the farmers.
That's popping. I'm talking like a city girl.
Right.
You know what? I've never seen a dead animal skeleton laying in the middle of downtown Akron. So
fortunately, I have.
But wait a minute, in Akron?
No, not in Akron.
Okay.
I think one of the most convincing things is that, you know, the family wouldn't really put themselves through this mm-hmm. if it was made up.
Yes, because they got so much grief afterwards.
I think this area, these people out here are a little mean. Didn't we cover a case with the UFO and those people were like being bullied and picked on because they seen a UFO out in this area?
I'm not giving that to Minerva. Minerva didn't pick on those people.
It's very close. It's just right.
And you know what? This podcast is running before that podcast, so you just gave away one of our podcasts.
That often.
Well, that's
all
right. Leave it as a teaser.
To me as a reporter is that I called Malone College. So what happened to these hair samples? Did you? We never got any hair samples.
When did you call them? At that time?
You know, at that time, and I was trying to follow
the
story.
So in 78?
Yeah, in 78. And then I would call down to the Minerva Village Hall and talk to people there. And oh, that's not even anywhere near Minerva. It was right outside the village limits.
The Men in Black came in and took away the hair samples.
But
Wright Patterson Air Force people that poo-pooed the UFOs.
Don't be giving clues to our next podcast. No, what are you talking about?
Yeah, Malone College disassociated themselves just about any knowledge of any samples.
Wow.
And the village kept distancing itself. Oh, that's nowhere near us, and we have nothing to do with it. And you
isn't
know,
that
pushing it away.
People, what is it? Why
and
do humans react
festival.
That way? And now you have okay. This is a good point. So eventually, Minerva came to embrace it, and the way the Rogues Hollow people came to embrace, you know, their reputation.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys had a festival for how many years?
When the movie came out, and then they decided to make a festival for a couple of days, and then I think it was the year after too, and I think there was supposed to be one this year, but unfortunately they canceled it because they had something, a brew fest or something going on instead.
Okay.
So it was supposed to be an annual event, and if you go into Kishman's grocery store, there's a picture of the owner and his wife, of a life-size picture of the what they call the Minerva Monster. It's a giant hoagie. So,
what is
hoagie,
an hoagie?
Hoagie sandwich.
Oh, a hoagie!
Oh, man, I want a Minerva Monster.
Submarine sandwich, yes.
You know what? He's a vegetarian. I'm not sure you should be naming meat
like
subs.
No.
Yeah, he would not like that. Maybe a nice salad.
Mm-hmm.
Nice
but
salad.
We have Minerva Monster t-shirts.
How about a salad that smells of ammonia?
There you
Can we
go.
Work that out?
That would be nice.
So t-shirts,
T-shirts and mugs and the whole.
I love the movie poster. Hands. That was very.
Yes.
That came out really well.
Yes, and the fact that I was in the movie, I think, was even scarier than the whole monster concept. But I was.
You were amazing.
In it way too
and
much.
You know what? You're as much a part of the story as anything because you were there, and. Other media, at first, they were hesitant to jump
they
on board,
They didn't
want to
jump on board, and the repository didn't get in until
Why do you think that was?
A couple weeks
later. Do you think
later,
they just didn't?
Oh, it
too
was
weird?
Just, this is too weird. This is too crazy. It's obviously a hoax.
Wow.
So they didn't report it for a while.
And you gave them a voice, which is what journalism does. You
I
give
guess,
voice
yeah.
to people who don't normally have the opportunity
mm-hmm.
to do that. And because you did... If you hadn't, who knows? The Minerva Monster would not be around.
No, probably
that,
wouldn't
as
be.
As a legend.
You said you went out to where this bedding was, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to go dig there. I bet you the lost French gold is there.
Ooh,
oh.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Oh my gosh,
could be.
All right,
there you
I
go.
Think we're putting that. Wait a minute, you just gave another word podcast.
Yeah. That one will come out before this one.
If you would have heard our French gold podcast by now.
Right.
Well, Minerva's obviously a cool place because we've been here twice. So,
well, from the journalism point of view, though, and even though this was, you know, as a cub reporter 40 years ago, it has apparently become the highlight of my journalism career. You know, never mind that I went to Haiti and Israel and interviewed Mother Teresa and interviewed Elie
Wiesel. Mother Teresa, wow.
None of that matters. I am only known for the Minerva Monster story.
Oh, isn't that funny?
You interview one of the most important women in history. And you're known for the Minerva Monster.
I am known for the Minerva Monster, yes.
Wow.
That is the highlight of my journalistic career now.
I'm sorry, we are Ohio Mystery, so.
Thank goodness for mysteries, or we wouldn't have a podcast.
That's right.
If you could meet the Minerva Monster, and he could speak as a reporter, what are your, top two questions for him? Or her.
What is your purpose, and why are you so shy?
That's a good question. I like that second question.
I have the answer to the second question.
Okay.
Because of the people with the bear and the shotguns.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, you did. You just solved that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mystery solved, yes.
Although apparently he doesn't know what the shotgun is, because he does
true.
Not flinch on that.
That's thing, true.
Which I find fascinating.
That's it for tonight, campers. If you want to know more about the Minerva Monster, check out the photos, news clippings, and links on ohiomysteries.com. If you like our podcast, please spread the word. We are on Facebook and Twitter, and would be so grateful if you would like, follow, share, or retweet us to your friends and family. Heck, all of it. We'd love to have them join us. And if you really like our podcast, our website has a link to our Patreon page where you can support us for as little as $1 a month, and we'll give you a shout out right here. Any money we get goes towards equipment, server fees, and research costs.
That brings us to tonight's featured musical artist, Daniel Rylander. Daniel has been involved in several Northeast Ohio bands over the years as a drummer, vocalist, and primary lyricist. And because he wanted to be fuller involved in his songwriting, he even taught himself to play the piano, guitar, and ukulele. Do you play an instrument, Steve?
I'm not going to comment. I did play the guitar, but I did play the clarinet when I was a kid.
The clarinet?
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes, there is.
Making some music. Sadly, Daniel's older brother David was killed in action in Afghanistan in 2012, and that led him to record a song called A Friend and Brother. And that set in motion a whole series of things that led to Daniel back into the studio and recording some full-length albums. So go check out his music at www.danielrylander.com. Let me spell that for you, because I always hate when people don't spell out websites, and I'm like, how do you spell that?
Right.
So it's Daniel and the last name Rylander.com. And if you want to see Daniel in person, you can check him out at the Barrel Run Winery in Rootstown on October 27 and at Compass Coffee in Akron on October 31.
27th, that's my birthday.
Oh, maybe I'll take you there for your birthday.
But as always, if you can't remember any of those details or just some of it, go to ohiomysteries.com and look under our featured music link. It's a one-stop shop there. For now, we'll leave you with the full version of the song right now. And we'll see you back here next week.
The distance between the thought I could catch from here to California is dead. weather gets colder here every summer. The winters are longer than the distance between. The flight I could catch from here to California and stand in your doorway. The light in your eyes is shining.
A news story gets shared by a friend on social media, or you catch a tweet that really makes your blood boil. But how do you separate fact from fiction? That's the premise behind Disinformation, a 10-part series from Evergreen Podcasts and Emergent Risk International coming this fall. Tune into Disinformation wherever you get your podcasts, and remember, don't believe everything you read.